This morning on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
Boy, some terrific late game theater last night in the NBA. Chaos in Madison Square Garden as the Knicks come back and out-tackle the 76ers for that win. And then Jamal Murray with quite the shot. Some really cool crowd shots of Jamal Murray rising up and hitting the game winner over Anthony Davis. The Lakers and Sixers both blow late leads. We still have yet to have a road win in the playoffs. We'll certainly talk more about that. Rick Carlisle pushed back to 9 today as we get the head coach on a game day, so very much appreciate that. Back to 9 o'clock for Rick Carlisle. Definitely want to get into Colts draft talk right here. And Andy Sweeney, I just posted something on our website, 1075thefan.com, of draft scenarios. You obviously don't know how the board's going to fall. We heard Chris Ballard talk on Friday, 19 to 21 guys they have labeled as first-round grades. Again, the Colts sit there at 15 overall. They have 7 picks in this year's draft. That's a small number for Ballard. Basically, they have all of their own picks. So they're in the middle of pretty much every round is where they'll select. I want to throw a couple scenarios at you. And basically, I think we can divide up the two scenarios into you stay put and you draft, or you trade. So the stay put and draft, the two scenarios would be this. Scenario A, you go Quinion Mitchell at pick 15. That is the corner out of Toledo. You come back in the second round, Troy Franklin, a wideout out of Oregon, who led the Pac-12 in receiving at 17.1 yards per catch and also had 14 touchdowns last year. And then in round 3, you go Alabama defensive end Chris Braswell. He led the SEC in pressures last season. So again, Mitchell the corner, Franklin the wideout, Braswell the defensive end. That's scenario A. B, you go pass catcher with the first pick. You go with Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU, big playability galore, tall, fast, over the top for Jaden Daniels last year. He would be the pick at 15. And then you come back and you go DBs with round 2 and round 3. Corner Max Melton out of Rutgers, and then a safety, DeJarrion Taylor Demerson out of Texas Tech. That would be scenario B. So you like to go defense early, come back with wideout edge rush, or do you want to go pass catcher early, come back with a corner and a safety?
All right, so you have tormented me on this. I've been looking over this since yesterday, okay? I was holding a little gas in my arms, and I'm thinking, which one of these do I like, okay?
Burp after A or burp after
burp
B,
after
little
a.
gas.
Boy, I tell you, he just would not nap yesterday for anything. He just, like, brother, you gotta, like, give me 20 minutes. Give me a quick 10-minute nap, just
but
anything.
Hey, if he sleeps at night.
Again, no complaints here.
Just wait till he gets older.
Oh, I just can't believe
go
it.
Go to sleep. I don't want to.
He's taking after his father with that one. I think with a lot of these, there is the dream scenario, and then there is, and sometimes the sexy scenario when you get to draft day, and then sometimes you got to eat your vegetables, right? You have to draft an offensive lineman or something like that. Now, that's not the Colts this year, but that is a little bit, at least at the offensive line position, which we can dive into. That is how I view the draft, and so I would probably go, you know, my dream scenario, you know, I love Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU. I said it early on in the process, KB, so you know I like him. I just don't feel like that's going to be where Ballard goes. And so if I'm choosing between those scenarios and I combine using my brain and not my heart, and then I combine that with what I actually think Ballard may do, I would go between these two. I would go with scenario A, probably. I would get Mitchell the corner, who is viewed, if not the best corner, and he is viewed as the best corner, I think, by many. He's the second best corner to Arnold from Alabama, and that would be a little bit of eating my vegetables. I want a wide receiver there, but I understand it because it is a position of need, and if this could be a number one type corner guy, that would be a great thing. And then you come back in the second round and you get Troy Franklin. And I said this to you off the air. I feel like, even though I watched a nice amount of Oregon football, obviously they had a great year last year, I feel like I just don't know as much about him as some of the other wide receivers in the class. But again, Franklin is an absolute monster. 6'3", buck 87, had over 80 catches last year. You mentioned the 14 touchdowns. So you get the wide receiver. I do think Ballard mentioning depth at wide receiver means he can take one not in the first round and still feel very comfortable. He's getting a guy that immediately can get on the field in Lucas Oil. And then I think what sells A for me would be you get a defensive end. And you and I agree with this. More of a natural edge is somebody that I think the Colts need. I've kind of moved on from Quiddy Pay for the most part. I don't know if they have as of yet. So you get your vegetables with the corner that you really need to help that room. You get a wide receiver in a deep class that is a guy that dominated the Pac-12 in college football last year. And then you get the guy opposite of Dallas Turner in Chris Braswell, who you hope you can develop. Like, you have other guys to get to the pass rusher, knowing that some of these, you know, you have EJ Speed, you have even more of a linebacker, but you have two pass rushers with Ian Quiddy Pay, probably not going to be here long term. You bring in Braswell in the third round, and that's how you get that production, and you do so at a better price. So if I'm picking between those two, a long way of saying I'd probably go with A, even though I love Brian Thomas Jr.
Quiddy Pay decision coming soon, right? They have until May 2nd for the fifth year option.
He's under contract for this season, but that fifth year team option for 2025, that must be exercised here just after the draft. So we'll get some answers on Quiddy Pay with that. I wanted to play this Chris Ballard clip. I thought Bob Kravitz asked Chris a great question on Friday about, you know, has your draft philosophy changed over the years? Again, my thing with Ballard in the draft is he's found a lot of good players. There's no denying that. He just hasn't found enough of them at the positions that truly matter. But I thought this was an interesting question and answer here from Chris Ballard on his draft philosophy evolving over the years.
Yeah, I like think I'm growing. Yeah, in a lot of ways. I mean, like, you know, longer you do this, I mean, even scouting or longer you do it, you hope you can grow and figure out, you know, who are the ones that, I mean, you're always looking for unique talent, unique traits in a player. But then also on the flip side of that, you know, making sure the character's always been very important with us, without question. But making sure that we're drafting not only the unique traits, but also some substance with it, with the tape. Now, we've always been pretty consistent with that, but, I mean, there's times you'll take a chance. And then I know where you're getting at, because we're going to trade back, and I can already see the article.
You know, I would say that certainly that cackle probably
I love the fade on the cackle as well.
I know. I feel like we're a movie scene now, transitioning to the
mad
next
scientist
scene there.
Just got his body to life.
You know, again, Ballard is a huge historical data. You know, you need as many darts as possible. I think there's more of an element of if you really, really like a guy, and again, that guy plays a premium position, if he is getting into your striking range, I think it's high-end quality over more quantity. I think you've got to view it in that light. But the more substance with the tape, you know, I think that is something that needs to be sprinkled in a little bit more. You know, the high-end testing athletes, and again, historical data indicates that if you're 6'3 and 205 and you run this, whatever, your success rate is higher than other guys. I think at the same time, though, you've got to remind yourself, it's not just a track meet. It's not just a decathlon. There is an element of football here that has got to be paid attention to heavily, and marrying those two and how that evolves, I think, is going to be something that you saw like last year with Josh Downs. You know, in a lot of ways, Andy, Josh Downs did not meet a ton of the criteria that the Colts would normally have for a wideout, but yet he's just a damn good football player. And anybody that watched him at North Carolina clearly saw that, and he's got NFL pedigree in his family, and clearly he had a really nice rookie season. It's those types of picks that I think you need to see more of.
Let me ask you this. I want to know what scenario you would go with, and then we have two more that we'll jump down to. Which wide receiver? Here's my biggest issue with why it's not even an issue. My biggest question with wide receiver for them, whether they go there in the first round, the second round, or hell, they even wait till later and they go third or fourth round, and we definitely think they should go much higher with a wide receiver round one, at least in round two. In this scenario, Troy Franklin, who is, you know, 6'3", we know he's a burner. I guess that's my question to you. Which one of these wide receivers do you view as replacing Alec Pierce, and which ones add to the offense and don't replace him?
Yeah,
I think that's the biggest question for me.
Yeah, if you're the Pierce family, you don't want to hear Brian Thomas Jr.'s name called at 15.
For sure, and that's one reason why I went away from that. As much as I love Brian Thomas Jr., I still think they believe in Alec Pierce.
Correct.
Going into this season.
And again, I don't know if it's like this just unbelievable amount of belief, like whatever, you believe in, I don't know, whatever you want to go with there. But I think it's more of a, we still haven't seen him in an opportunity where he should flourish. And that is with a big arm quarterback. You know, you talk to Reggie Wayne, he'd be like, guys, Alec Pierce was running wide the you-know-what open on many occasions last year, and we just could not get him the football. For me, I'm more of a yards after catch player, and that again comes in all different shapes and sizes, and I think that's what kind of makes the beauty of it is you're not married to 6'3 necessarily. Of these two scenarios, I'd probably lean a little bit more towards A than B, getting the edge rusher, because again, I think just because you've routinely missed at drafting that position doesn't mean you stop swinging at that spot. And I think the Alabama guys are always interesting to me. You know, part of you could look at it and say, well, they play at Alabama, there's tons of attention on the players around them, therefore, they've got a bunch of individual favorable matchups and a bunch of one-on-one reps, whereas if you're drafting the star pass rusher at UCLA, he's the only guy, and yet he produced at a high level. Or you could say with the Bama dude, he faced unbelievable competition on a week-in, week-out basis.
He practiced against the best.
Correct.
Yeah.
And his playing time was not as much as it was for other guys. You know, Braswell doesn't have very many starts in his college resume. But yet, when he's on the field, again, he led the SEC in pressures. And, you know, is there something there that you could work with? So, again, I'd probably side a little bit more towards A there. Now, the B scenarios, so I guess this would be the second scenario. These would be the trade ones, all right? So, the trade up, you give up your second-round pick, move from 15 to 8. You take Malik Nabers.
Yeah, that's the one I'm picking.
You're like the pop quiz guest that's just cut off the... You don't want to hear the second scenario?
I know the 1970s hockey. No, continue. I'm just saying, Nabers, if he is elite, you get elite at number 8.
You don't worry about Bourbon Street arrest?
Listen, Malik Nabers, think of Jefferson with the Vikings. Think of Odell Beckham at the beginning of his career with the New York Giants. I had another example. I should have written this down. There are guys that can explode onto the scene, play right away, and can take you to the next level. Imagine putting Nabers with Michael Pittman Jr., that offensive line, Anthony Richardson, a healthy and happy Jonathan Taylor, Pierce on the outside, Downs on the inside. Come on. That's what... Yeah, but continue. Go ahead.
Malik is in any relation to Jim Nabers. I don't think so, but that
I
might be something to look into here.
Is he a singing prowess?
Never know. I guess we could find maybe post-game locker room this year. We could see that potentially here in Indy. Malik Nabers, you trade up again. Give up 15. Give up your second rounder. Get up to 8. You would select him. My thought there is you get up above the Bears, who are drafting at 9. And then you come back in round 3 and you take a corner. So you still address that need. Kamari Lassiter was a name I threw in here out of Georgia. Ballard is a big fan of the Georgia defense, and understandably so. He's very impressed by just the intellect of how Kirby Smart coaches defense. So that would be your foreign, rare, un-Chris Ballard-like insert of that right there.
It's not going to happen.
Now, the peak Chris Ballard move would be the trade back. So theoretically, you move back from 15 to 22. Remember, he said 19 to 21 blue chip or first round guys. You would take Cooper DeJean out of Iowa there. You come back in the second round with your own second rounder. You take Malachi Corley, the yards after catch guy at Western Kentucky. You would then would get an extra second rounder from Philly with this trade back. Chris Ballard has had 4 first round draft picks in his career. He's had 13 second round picks. We know he loves round two. Here, you go with a linebacker. Is it too early for a linebacker? Maybe. EJ Speed is a free agent. Edgerrin Cooper out of Texas A&M is a linebacker I tossed in here. And then in round three, go back to what Ballard said on Friday. Feels like in the middle rounds, you can get some really quality offensive line talent. Let's go to the west side, a little bit further out west from that combine. And let's go with Blake Fisher out of Notre Dame.
Your boy.
Very highly ranked recruit. Started as a true freshman. Battled some injuries in his freshman season. Safe to say he didn't live up to the full five-star hype. But again, that athletic makeup, you know, guy that played right tackle. Do you look at Braden Smith's future and think, okay, is there something there? So this would be the Ballard pass precedent scenario here. The trade back of seven spots in round one, get the additional second, and then you walk away. Versatile DB, yard after catch wideout, potentially a linebacker of the future, and an offensive tackle that you could throw into the mix there for some depth purposes.
Yeah, again, this is a little bit of, are you going to have cotton candy for dinner? Or are you going to have your, you know, green beans and corn type thing? Neighbors at eight, I think, could fundamentally change this franchise, or a guy like him. It's nothing against Michael Pittman Jr. He's going to have over 100 catches this season. He'll have more than five touchdowns this season. He will make big plays. I want to be clear with that. This is nothing against that. I want to bring in a wide receiver that's going to replace Michael Pittman Jr. This is now you get a guy that potentially can do all of those next level things and can be a number one receiver, a next two. You're already number one receiver. I don't think it's going to happen. But boy, if we came in here on, imagine if you're a Colts fan on Thursday night and us knuckleheads come in here, we waddle in here at 7 a.m. and we're talking about Malik Nabers joining that offense and Anthony Richardson, you would be as happy as you would be, even though you would give up, you know, draft capital, you would be as happy with Chris Ballard as you've been in many years.
Would you do the same trade for Bowers?
Probably not. Probably not. I probably wouldn't.
Because
I'm trying to
tight
think
end.
Why. Yeah, yeah. I just, and boy,
is
Bowers,
that a, is that a disservice to Bowers label? I'm just a tight end.
It probably is. I just feel like Nabers and Harrison, if we are to believe the rhetoric around them, there could be an electrification within the entire organization and offense that is just difficult to find. If you believe that is Nabers, that is next level stuff. I would probably say, though, you know, when I wrote these down, going back to scenario A and then this scenario D, listen, I mean, I like this. Philly moves up a lot. Philly is always one of the more active teams. If you told me, you know, they're very unhappy with the way their season ended, they're going to change things up, I wouldn't be surprised. Corley's a good player. Cooper's seen as a really good player. I did some research on him, the Texas A&M linebacker. And then we did our Colts on the clock, what, last week on Cooper DeJean, a guy that he can do a little bit of everything. He plays special teams. He can be an inside corner. He can be an outside corner. Doesn't mind tackling. I would be fine if we came in here on Monday and they got Cooper DeJean and it played out that they got Corley and then filled some other needs. I think it would be a solid. I mean, there wouldn't be the boom of a Malik Nabers, but I think it would be damn solid. Don't you?
Yeah. Brian asked about, you know, would you package Quiddy Pay and try to trade, you know, trade a pick with Pay and, you know, obviously move up in the draft. Again, I still get the vibe and the impression they want and think that there's more there with Quiddy Pay. I'm probably a little bit more skeptical on him becoming that dominant true edge rusher. So that's where I would differ from that. But I'd be a little surprised. Granted, you know, sometimes in the draft you see this where all of a sudden a pick happens in round one, you're a little bit crowded on your roster, and now all of a sudden, you know, maybe day two or even day three, you make some sort of trade there. Now, of course, when you get to day three, it's more back into the roster guys, but you know, probably something to keep an eye on. Yeah, seven picks. That's not a lot for Chris Ballard. So you look at that last scenario I mentioned, and you're adding an extra pick.
It's a lot of darts, as you mentioned.
And that is Ben Ballard's MO. Now, does he need to change it? That's a totally fair question with that. But if you look at Ballard precedent, that last scenario just I mean, that's music to his ears.
Yeah.
In all honesty.
Yeah, and only one of those had a safety, and that would be interesting as well. Again, it's like taking your vegetables, a safety. When do they take a safety?
Draft had a lot of safeties here recently.
Do they take another one there as well? All right, we're going to move this up just a little bit. Rab John's coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll talk some IU basketball, some portaling with IU. We'll do that here in a second. But every single day leading up to the NFL draft, we're highlighting another player today from LSU, kind of my man crush, Brian Thomas Jr. We'll talk about him. Mark, go ahead and hit the open.
The Colts are on the clock.
All right, so this has been my guy. He's the other wide receiver at LSU across from Malik Nabers. Boy, they put out so much talent, don't they, at LSU in the SEC. Brian Thomas Jr., about almost 6'3", about 210, didn't do all of the work at his pro day, did run a 4.33, if you care about those things, at the Combine a couple months ago. 68 catches, a little over 1,100 yards, 17 touchdowns. Big, tall guy. Again, this goes back to, you know, is he more of a replacement if you don't believe in Alec Pierce? That would be a conversation for the Colts picking at 15. This is a big-time player that I believe KB will be there. Don't you think he'll be there? Maybe somebody moves up besides Harrison and Nabers. This is, you know, one of the guys, probably the guy that would sit there as the third wide receiver. Again, that would be arguable. I would say Roma Dunze is probably third. Brian Thomas, I should say, would be fourth. We'll give our thoughts, scale of 1 to 10, whether we think Ballard will take him. But your thoughts on Brian Thomas Jr., a lot of T. Higgins comparisons with him.
Yeah, I think honestly a bigger play potential than even Higgins. I mean, the size and speed combo, you absolutely love. You know, massive, massive yards per catch numbers, the touchdown numbers. You know, if you want early speed, I think you have the fastest 20-yard split of anybody at the combine. You know, this is your outside wideout. We mentioned earlier, if you are in the Alec Pierce family, you don't want to see this selection at 15. Now, again, there are some questions about, well, he had a great wideout opposite him, a great quarterback with him. You know, how much of that certainly helps out the scenario? Is there a full route tree, or is it just, you know, go ball after go ball after go ball? And, you know, this is a guy that Rick Venturi, when we had him on, absolutely loved. You know, labeled Michael Pittman Jr. as more of the middle of the field, tight end-like in a way. So you need more of that outside the number type of guy. So, you know, this is there's a reason why I put him in that other scenario we did earlier, Andy, because to me, I have not ruled out pass catcher at all at 15. I know a lot of people are like, no, corner, corner, corner. I've said this all throughout the draft process. Come Friday morning, if they get a pass catcher for Anthony Richardson, you will hear no complaining from me.
So what about Thomas? Because he could be that guy.
Certainly, yeah.
This would be, if you believe that Adunze and Nabers and Harrison are all going before, if you're not moving up, if you're staying at 15 or around 15, this is the guy.
Well, again, what the question comes is this. The wideout you get at 15 compared to the wideout you get at 46, how does that compare to the corner you get at 15 and the corner at 46?
Right.
That's the question you have to ask. And I know that is maybe a little bit bigger picture, or just a little bit of a, boy, you're really thinking, you know, not outside the box, but let's just focus on the here and now and, you know, spend 15 and worry about 46 when you get there. But, you know, draft depth is there for a reason. And, you know, when you look at a board and you see, wow, look at all the wideouts we have ranked in the top 50 players versus look at all the corners you have ranked in the top 50 players, you can't totally ignore that. So that's where my hesitancy does come into play with you're spending that pick on it. But if you just want to live in the present and the here and now, yeah, I mean, for many, many reasons, this is very helpful to Anthony Richardson.
What is his injury? He had a left shoulder injury. Is that the only thing that I can see?
I thought I read that.
I'm looking it up right now.
But again, from a size and speed standpoint, I mean, this is everything Chris Bauer.
Did you guys want? This could be the guy, by the way.
Like, did you guys want Venturi's thoughts on Brian Thomas?
Yeah.
All right, here you go.
Thomas from LSU, you know, is a big outside guy that can win, that can beat the press. He's 6'4", over 205. You know, he's a 4-3 guy, 4-3-3. I mean, he can explode and go get it. He would be like bringing a fast A.J. Brown into the, what he meant to the Eagles, if you will, except this kid has a lot more speed than A.J. Brown and size and toughness. I think he's right. I think he's got a lot to go.
Okay, so why aren't we begging Ballard to take this guy? Like, yeah. That's been my thing. If he's a faster A.J. Brown, if he's from a factory in the SEC, like LSU, if he's been coached by just one of the great football minds, Brian Kelly, of all time. Come on, I'm having fun with you. With Brian Kelly, why are we not yelling and screaming, hey, go get this guy, Chris Ballard?
I think there's a little, I mean, there are, I think it's scary, the similarities to Alec Pierce, in all honesty. And just the height and the—I mean, if you look at Pierce's height and size and 40-yard dash time, and you look at Brian Thomas Jr., I mean, Andy, find me the differences.
Well, you know, I know
people won't want to go there because one's black and one's white, but like they literally have the exact same height, weight, and 40-yard dash time when you really break it down. And if anybody watched Pierce at Cincinnati, there were big plays galore. I mean, you want to watch their national semifinal game against Alabama. He was getting by Alabama DBs. So I think the question would become is it a one-trick pony? That's what Pierce has been labeled as. And is it unfair to label Thomas in that manner? That would be the question I think you would have there.
Yeah, there is a shoulder injury. Albert Breer, Sports Illustrated, is reporting there's a shoulder injury. Should be nothing that will affect the season, but I don't know. You get into the medical stuff of, you know, things that these guys may be nursing. I think Brian Thomas, here's last thing on this before a check down. I think Brian Thomas is one of those guys that if the Colts take him, will obviously follow his career. If the Colts do not take him, KB, there will be people like me who will remember they skipped on Brian Thomas and will wonder then if he goes on and is great, we'll say, hey, you had a chance at 15 as the fourth wide receiver, right, to go get a guy. And it's not just Brian Thomas. There are other guys, but I think he would fit that mold. When you get to 15, if you can stay firm at 15 and get Brian Thomas, if you don't take him, to me, we'll keep that in the back of our mind if he goes into the NFL a couple spots after 15 at, you know, 16, 17, 18, 19, a big team like the Chiefs were to move up somebody like that, and we would follow their career and say, boy, you really wish you could have had that. And then Thomas will be tied to Alec Pierce. And if Alec Pierce, like last year, has 30 catches and 2 touchdowns.
And just a reminder, Anthony Richardson, when he turns 24 years old, we think of 24 as pretty young for a quarterback, right? When he turns 24, Michael Pittman Jr. will be a free agent again. So who is the number one wideout growing in the prime years of Anthony Richardson? Yeah. And, you know, Pittman will only be 29. I don't act like he'll be done by any means.
But you don't know if he's going to sign again into his 30s. You don't know that.
And at that point, you could be looking at more of just, let me get the one last big payday on that. Game 2 tonight, 8:30 from Milwaukee. We're very much appreciative of Rick Carlisle's time on a game day. The head coach of the Pacers joins us now. Coach, we'll get right into it. The handling of the last 24, 36 hours for you, based off kind of how game one went, did you handle it any differently than you thought? More film? Did you want to get on the floor a little bit more yesterday? Anything different just of the nature of how game one unfolded?
Different than what?
More film. Did you feel like you had to get on the floor more, even though there's kind of a quick turnaround? I guess anything different from maybe what you're originally planning in between game one and game two?
No.
What was the biggest issue as you guys went back and looked at things from Sunday night? Was there one thing that stood out?
Well, the beginning of the game was very tight, very back and forth. And, you know, the score was 20-19 with a minute and 50 to go in the first quarter. And then we had a really bad last 2 minutes. And so we ended up, I think, 30-21. And so, you know, those pockets of poor play are something that we have to eliminate tonight, obviously. It was a great environment. It was wild. The Milwaukee fans were loud. And for our first timers, you know, it was it was getting, you know, tossed into the deep end. And so I think we learned a lot in the first half. With learning, you know, oftentimes comes, you know, difficulty. And so it was not fun, but the second half was better. And tonight we got to play 48 minutes instead of 24.
Rick Carlisle with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Coach, when Dame Lillard, and we know how great he was in that first quarter, in that first half, we can get to how you defended him. I want to get to that here in a second in the second half. But when he was not on the floor, the Bucks were plus 21. I believe that was the final number. How much, I'm not blaming your bench, but that was definitely part of it. How big of a surprise were the non-Damian Lillard minutes for Milwaukee a couple nights ago?
Well, everything gets analyzed and overanalyzed, you know, in a playoff game. And we didn't do a good job on Lillard. That's obvious. We had breakdowns, and we're going to have to fix that tonight. You know, his explosive first quarter was a big reason that we got behind the eight ball early. As for plus minus and all that kind of stuff, you know, the final score is what matters. And once again, I mean, you know, we just got to be really good through the entirety of the game, you know, not just in the second half.
Again, 8:30 tonight, it'll be the Pacers and Bucks game two. Rick Carlisle joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Coach, 8 of 38 from three, obviously pretty uncharacteristic for you guys. When you went back and watched, did you like the looks you were getting, or do you feel like you've got to do a better job of getting cleaner looks?
I liked a lot of the looks we got. There were instances where we could have made one more pass and gotten an even better look. You know, the make-miss aspect of it is just another part of playoff basketball. But really, we had too many breakdowns defensively. You know, our level has to be higher at the start of the game and moving throughout the game. You know, the issues with Lillard came down to a lot of problems with pick-and-roll coverage, and we just simply didn't execute in the first half. Obviously better in the second half, but, you know, I keep repeating this. It's a, you know, it's a 48-minute game. So playoff series are difficult. They're very hard. And, you know, we got to embrace the difficulty of this thing, and we got to step it up.
Tyrese mentioned yesterday after practice that he needs to be more aggressive. What did you observe film-wise and just the level of his aggression and assertiveness in game one?
Yeah, we talked about it quite a bit yesterday and last night. Yeah, I just think we have to play a better overall game as a team. You know, our defense has got to be better. You know, our team is built on balance, and, you know, Pascal had a big game with, you know, 36 points. We may have had one or two other guys in double figures, but we're really built to be a team that's got to have, you know, somewhere between five and eight guys in double figures. And so we worked on some things to help Tyrese get some better looks, some better opportunities to make plays. With that, everybody has a responsibility defensively to step it up in game two. And, you know, he's as a great player, you know, he's got to be more aggressive too. So, great learning experience for him in game one, but, you know, game two has got to be different.
Rick Carlisle with us, Pacers head coach. Pacers Bucks tonight, 8:30. Our coverage on The Fan at 8 o'clock. He joins us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Coach, you know, one thing I thought you guys have been so great at this season is the bounce back. If you had a loss or a disappointing performance, boy, you've bounced back. We've seen it really all season, all the way to the end, you know, closing the season, getting the sixth seed by beating Atlanta at home. What leads you to believe that tonight you will bounce back in Milwaukee?
I love our team. I love our guys. I have great levels of confidence in our guys. And we learned a lot in game one, you know. And so
point, this is what playoff basketball is all about. It's about responding. It's about adjusting, and then looking forward to the next opportunity. So, you know, we're anxious to get back out there tonight. You know, once again, the environment was tremendous. You know, it really was. And, you know, opening on the road in the NBA playoffs is no joke. I mean, look around. I mean, not one road team has won yet. And, you know, with the insanity of last night's games, you know, it's just the best time of year.
Yeah, some terrific theater, late game drama at the Garden, certainly out in Denver late last night. Again, Rick Carlisle joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline, 8:30 tonight, NBA TV and Bally, and we will, of course, have it on these airwaves as well. It'll be game two. Coach, 10, 11 deep, you expect that to be the number that you want to go to again tonight from a rotation standpoint?
Stay tuned.
8:30, I will be dialed in.
Rick Carlisle with us. Was there a sense of, Coach, I mean, you've harped on, you got to play the entire game and defense matters and the playoffs are going to be different. And sometimes you just got to be in the midst of it. You said you got to throw the guys to the deep end for them to experience it. Was there a sense of, hey, guys, I told you it was going to be like this. I told you so. Was there a sense of that after game one on Sunday?
Yeah, we stay away from the I told you so, you know, approach. That's not, you know, that's not the ample way to, you know, approach today's NBA player. I mean, look, you try to prepare as best you can. But there are just simply some things that you have to experience. And so game one, you know, on Sunday was, Sunday. Game one on Sunday was a moment that our guys that have never been in the playoffs will remember. And now we've got to turn the page and get to game two with a different posture, with a different disposition and a different attitude and approach. And so we're looking forward to doing it.
Coach, we'll end with this, and thank you for the time here on a game day. Do we make too much out of game one to game two adjustments in a series? Like, how much as a coaching staff do you feel like, oh, wow, we already made many adjustments in game one within the game, and we like some of that stuff that happened in the third quarter, second half, and obviously those are things we'd like to continue tonight. How much do you think it's overrated, maybe the game one to game two adjustments in a series?
It varies. You know, it varies. There are times it's very overrated, and there are times when it's not. I mean, there's a saying that the playoffs are all about adjustments, and you know, I believe that is true. Sometimes the adjustments, you know, are attitude and disposition, much more so than strategy or rotations and stuff like that. But every playoff series is different, has a different character, has different things going on. So, you know, tonight we've made our preparations for tonight. We'll have a short shoot around today, and we're looking forward to get back out there to compete. I mean, once again, this is, you know, been a great environment here, and you know, when we come home, we expect there to be an equally wild environment at Gainbridge.
5:30 Friday, and then coming back on Sunday for game four. We'll see if the Pacers can even it up tonight at 1-1. Coach, thank you very much for the time. I know it's a busy morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Yes, draft coverage coming up 7 o'clock Thursday night. Again, round one Thursday, 2 and 3 Friday. That is also Friday night. And then rounds 4 through 7 starting at noon on Saturday. Rick Carlisle up on the podcast. We just had him on earlier in the 9 o'clock hour. But to focus more on the draft and the Colts, Joel A. Erickson from The Star joins us now. Joel, let's start there. 7 picks for Chris Ballard. That is a small number when it comes to Chris Ballard drafts. If I told you I'm moving the Vegas over-under to 9.5 picks Chris Ballard will make in this year's draft, you would say over or under?
I'm going to take the under, but I would take the over on 7 picks. I take the under on 9.5, but I'm taking the over on 7.
So you view 8 or 9 is what you're going with there.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. He's going to pick up an extra 1 or 2. I think 3 might be, I think 3 might be a little tough.
Did you make anything out of 19 to 21 guys have first-round grades? They're sitting there at 15, theoretically. You trade back a few spots, you still get a first-round grade, and maybe you recoup an extra, whatever, third-rounder.
Yeah, I do think that that's a possibility. I also thought that the signal, like sort of the another piece I kind of seized on from his press conference last Friday was, you know, he kind of firmly believes the offense is going to carry the day early. And that made me think that, you know, he's kind of expecting a lot of those offensive guys to be off. 19 to 21. The other thing about 19 to 21 is that, like, it's always important to remember some teams are going to have different boards than that because of scheme fit or whatever. And so that 19 to 21 first-round grades probably stretches. Like, they'll probably still have one of those guys on the board maybe near the end of the first round. Maybe not. Maybe there's more consensus this year. But my understanding is that usually teams end up having those guys a little bit longer in. So, yeah, I definitely think – I mean, there were a lot of trade-back jokes in that press conference as well. I do think that's kind of his go-to, but also there were a lot of trade-back jokes in that press conference.
Oh, yeah. He gave it to the media a couple different times in that 15-minute press conference to Chris Ballard on Friday. Joel A. Erickson with us here. He's from the Indy Star. He joins us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. I've been trying to think of how to ask you this. I mean, over the last several weeks, month, maybe even the last couple days, as we're here at draft week, do you have a stronger thought on something you think Ballard will do over the next few days? And is there an item maybe that you felt much stronger on several weeks ago and now you feel maybe much more up in the air as we get closer to Thursday night?
Yeah, I do think that, I mean, I think they're taking a wide receiver sometime early. There's this piece that I was working on a story on, you know, the Colts typically draft for need, and I was writing about corner, and I was going through, like, this is where you end up, you know, twisting yourself in knots over the draft. He kind of said a lot of stuff about how much they like their guys at corner and belief in them, and you know we really really like those guys. KB, you can back me up on this. He says that a lot about positions he's going to make a pick on very early, right? Like, yeah. I feel like historically it's been like, we really like our defensive ends. Boom, Quiddy Opeyo, Dio Dembo. Mm-hmm. And we really like our wide receivers. Boom, Alec Pierce. Like, it just kind of feels like, I was like, man, you know, he's kind of throwing doubt a little bit on the cornerback position, but I feel like I've heard this answer before.
Yeah, I'll be honest, Joel. I thought the other answer that was interesting to me was how he talked about the defensive backs and just the lack of a defensive move here so far in the offseason. You know, I would say he got borderline defensive about it and comparing it to the offensive line group of the end of the 2022 season, which was a disastrous season, of course, but that O-line group he felt like played well late in the year. And then they obviously bounced back and played really well last season. And he compared the current DB makeup to that. I would probably push back and say, I don't see the past history and the past precedent with those DBs like you have seen it with the offensive line, i.e. Quentin Nelson, Braden Smith, Ryan Kelly. Did that answer stick out to you at all?
Yeah, it did, and kind of for the same reason that you said. Like, one of the things with the offensive line was you still had three players. I mean, one of them in Nelson, who's, you know, one of the best guards in the league, really in every year other than 20, other than the, you know, the horrible year we don't want to mention. But, like, you have that. You have Ryan Kelly, who's a 4-time Pro Bowler. And Braden Smith, who's a very, very good right tackle. Now, you do have anchors in the secondary. Obviously, Kenny Moore is an anchor. You believe Julian Blackman is an anchor after the way he stepped forward last year. But there is a piece of it that's like, I can see him drawing the link between, you know, we expected Bernard Raimann and Will Fries to play well. They ended up, you know, really developing and taking the next step. you've got young corners who could do that. To me, you're expecting more in terms of numbers and expecting really more from a outside of Kenny, more from everybody else in that whole thing. Because like if you're going by numbers, you look at it as there's five offensive linemen. Three of those guys were established stars who for, you know, a variety of different reasons maybe didn't play up to their standards, and you believe they can play that way again. There's five starters, quote-unquote, in the secondary. I would say Kenny Moore is the only one who I would say rises to the level of a Kelly or a Smith or a Nelson in terms of what we've seen from him year over year over year. And that means there's four other spots that kind of have questions.
First round of the NFL draft coming up on Thursday. We'll have coverage here on The Fan. His name, Joel A. Erickson, on the Payless Liquors Hotline. You mentioned wide receiver, and you think it's going to be sooner rather than later. If it's not Thursday, then definitely on Friday that they take a wide receiver. I guess I'll try to put both of these questions together. If they take a guy like Brian Thomas Jr., who could be there at 15 and they don't even have to move up, or if they had to move up a spot or two and not give up very much to get him, what do you think that says? His measurables very similar to a guy like Alec Pierce. And then Ballard, as a second part, Joel, Ballard went on with Rich Eisen and kind of had some fun and joked around with the thought that they would move up to to go get Marvin Harrison Jr. He called it a fantasy land. There have been some mock drafts, and we have even discussed here, Joel, on them moving up some spots if Malik Nabers were to fall just a little bit. I guess my question would be, I know you'd have to give up a lot, but if Nabers is great and you love Marvin Harrison Jr., why not? You've done it one way every year if you're Chris Ballard. Why not do something a little bit different that would shake the foundation of this draft on Thursday and do something bold, move up, and go get a big-time wide receiver?
Because he likes his picks. Or he loves them picks. I can't remember what the exact term is.
I love them picks.
But that would be the reason that I think he would say is, you know, like, if you're going to make that jump, especially for Marvin,
it's going to cost you.
Moves in the first round end up costing a lot of picks. Chris Ballard likes picks. In terms of Brian Thomas, this is what I know about what the organization feels about Alec Pierce. They feel like he's done a good job at winning downfield, and we haven't seen entirely as much of it as we should have because of some decision-making and or reticence on the part of the quarterbacks he's mostly played with to make those plays. They probably feel like he has some work to do in the slant short yardage game, but they do very much believe in his ability to get deep down the field. I keep coming back to, or the quote that I keep coming back to, is something that Chris said to you guys way back at the Combine, and it was the answer about, you know, they've got Jonathan Taylor, the explosiveness that he provides. He kind of talked about they need the yak guy. They need a guy who you can get the ball too short, and he's going to turn it into something. And I asked about it again the other day, and he said, you know, some of those plays come from scramble drills and stuff like that. But also, I mean, and he acknowledged this in his answer, like, yeah, you want the guy who can take the hitch and turn it into a big gain. I've kind of been thinking, I've kind of like tucked that away in the back of my head for a long time now. And just like, you know, was that him saying, like, this is the thing that we need in this offense, however it looks?
Joel A. Erickson from the Indianapolis Star. Draft coverage, him and Nate Atkins will have you covered here, coming up here Thursday, Friday, and Saturday over at West 56th Street. Joel, would you be more surprised by an O lineman in round one for the Colts or a linebacker in round two?
O lineman in round one, I'd be more surprised by. I the linebacker pick.
He likes the O line, well, class.
He does.
He wants to protect Anthony Richardson.
Joel, there'll be riots if they take an offensive lineman. Oh.
He said there's lots of depth. That's the piece that I'm kind of hinging.
Yes, you are right.
But the linebacker thing in the second round, like Zaire Franklin is locked up for a while. EJ Speed, I believe, signed a 2-year deal last year.
Yeah, contract year for him, yep.
Yeah, so they've done that in the past. They did it with Bobby Okereke in the third round, not the second, but they did it in the third round when Anthony Walker was going into his year. So, yeah, I could see the linebacker in the second round. I think either of those picks, to your point, Andy, would make people not enthused.
It's a nice way
That's
of saying
a politically
it.
Correct
yeah,
answer.
You can't say we would riot, but, you know, I think some Colts fans would be rather upset, let down, if they take an offensive lineman. Couldn't turn out to be a great pick. You know, sometimes you got to eat your vegetables as well. Joel A. Erickson with us. Any thoughts on the news coming out official the last 24 hours or so that Jim Irsay is not going to be there in attendance physically with Ballard Steichen, et cetera? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it sounds from what you know, Mike Chaplin and Stephen Holder reported, that the leg procedure that he had is pretty significant, and you know, whatever mobility issues, it's the draft is a lot of sitting and waiting and getting up and moving around and stuff like that, and so I totally understand that. It's you know, for a while now, he's been pretty back to normal, at least in terms of his social media accounts and stuff like that. So I think maybe not totally surprised. And like I said, given the nature of mobility issues, you can understand why something like the draft is a difficulty, would be a difficulty.
Joel, we only have about a minute left. Am I allowed to put you on the spot at pick 15?
Yeah, sure. I'll go Quinyon Mitchell.
Okay. All right. I went Terrion Arnold.
That's not bad either. Quinyon, it's not bad either. I'm having trouble figuring out who's supposed to go in front of them. But yeah, those two, I think, are the corners.
So that would be wide receiver then in round two, in your opinion, probably at least.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, you know, think about Mitchell, a little bit more height than Arnold. Great Senior Bowl. That is something I should probably put a little bit more focus on. Height than a 4.50 40-yard dash, that I don't know if that's really Chris Ballard at pick 15, but I think there's a lot of Arnold that could make up for that. A lot of things, wingspan, short area quickness, that can kind of make up for some of those deficiencies. Joel, I will see you a whole lot here for the next 72 hours. I like you. I don't know if I like you that much, but nonetheless, I'll be sitting behind you here coming up.
Good. Yep. Well, we'll be right there in front of each other. So.